Some claim that the age of a true gentleman is far behind us, but here at 284 Media, we disagree. He may appear in different guises today, but the values and ideals that make him a gent still stand. Gentlemen, aspiring gentlemen, and of course, our partners that hold us down, I'm Ron Grant. Welcome to Season 2 of The Art of a Distinguished Gentleman, a show poised to help guide modern-day men into 21st century distinguished gentlemen. Now, please, don't worry. It doesn't always involve suits and bow ties, even though I'm super sharp today. I appreciate it. But raw real-life lessons that translate to grounded, community-minded, well-rounded men. Thank you all for taking this journey with me. The art of service to mankind and serving in the public's eye is not an easy task. Your life is not your own. Your actions are heavily monitored and criticized. Now, moreover, your family is also under heavy scrutiny. Yet, many of us continue to serve our communities in various facets with pride, elegance, and dignity because we simply love to, and well, somebody's got to do it. My guest today knows a whole lot about service. For the past few years, he has served as the governor of the Virgin Islands. He has seen the territory of the Virgin Islands through the hurricanes of 2017, and of course, still working with officials and leaders to navigate through the present pandemic that is COVID-19. He's been hailed as one of, if not the most down-to-earth governor. And while many may not always appreciate his style of leadership, the man knows his job and isn't bothered by whether you like him or not, a quality I think many of us should adopt. Outside of public life, he's a father, husband, and one of the most fun-loving persons you'll ever meet. The man knows how to have a good time, loves to dance, and a lover of charity. Now, viewers, it is my absolute honor and privilege to share my set with outgoing governor of the Virgin Islands, His Excellency, the one and only Governor Augustus J.U. Jasper. Usually, I'm drilling him on policies, agendas, legislations, and of course, the very amusing political feuds. But not today. It's a softer side. To get to meet the man himself, a true and consummate 21st century distinguished gentleman, His Excellency, Governor Augustus J.U. Jasper. All this and more after a word from our sponsors. You're watching The Art of a Distinguished Gentleman. Let's go. Viewers, welcome back. I am so super excited to have His Excellency Governor Augustus Jasper with us today. Governor Jasper, welcome to The Art of a Distinguished Gentleman.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here. Cheers.
You are, as I mentioned in the intro, one of the most liked persons. Have said you are approachable, relatable, very down to earth. They see you on a Friday having a glass of wine, eating some pizza, dancing, enjoying yourself. When you think of your time, when you reflect on your time in the BVI, what are some of the most memorable moments for you?
Well, it's been quite a time. My time here, I got here August 2017, and even before I actually unpacked my bags in Government House, I was taken out to see the flooding of August 2017, yes. Which in everything we've been through in the last years, you kind of forget that we had those floods in August 2017. I remember someone saying to me, who took me out to go and see the damage from the floods, they said, Governor, this is the worst we've had for 50 years. Mm-hmm. Your time here will be quiet.
Ooh.
I saw him 2 weeks later when Irma hit. He said the same thing. He said, Governor, this is the worst for 100 years. Your time here will be quiet.
Were you thinking that at all, that the time here would be quiet?
Well, no, not quite. I mean, I never do any role, particularly a role where you're placed in such a privileged leadership position. Mm-hmm. No role I've ever taken do you want to make quiet. And anybody can choose to make any role in life. Anything you do in life, you can choose to make quiet or you can throw your whole self into it. Mm-hmm. And I believe, for me, doing a role like governor, that is about, it's about service. It's about giving to people. And you've got to throw your whole life into that. Right. If you do any job in life thinking, I'm just going to give it 10% and I'm going to try and keep it quiet, I think that you're onto setting yourselves up for failure at that point.
Yeah. When you think of a gentleman and you think of yourself in particular, all the facets that make up your life and who you are outside of public office, who is Augustus Jasper?
Well, Gus today, okay. for starters. So there's a lot that makes everyone. And I think a core thing is just, the first thing is, particularly as you rise up and you get into more senior positions, whatever field you're in, and you get into leadership positions, there is pressure for you to be what someone else wants you to be. And something really important for me is just being true to yourself.
Okay.
Every day I wake up and I'm being true to myself. Every decision I take, I might not everyone might like it. Yeah. But am I being true to myself? Yeah, and there are decisions which, you know, I know not everyone likes. But when you think about what matters to you in life, what are your values and what shaped you on that? And I know I have a good sense of my values and what drives me to try and do good in the world, to try to make here and my time here a better place, to try to bring out the best in people, to try to be kind and support people to do the right thing and to flourish. Those values make you. And then me outside of work, core to me is also that I am the same person in and out of work, but also I am a dad.
Yes.
I've got a wonderful wife and two lovely boys. They're pretty hard work, but they are fantastic to see them grow and develop. And that's a big part of my life as
Thank you for mentioning that. They are 8 and 12, the boys. A husband, father. What was it like raising your boys in the BVI? What was that experience like for you and seeing them?
Yeah. So being a governor, it's a job you do with your family in a way, to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And I remember actually my youngest one, so I got two, Oscar and Tobias. The youngest one is age 8. So he was, what was he? He was about 5 when we got him. And he was on the plane when we were coming first in. We'd never been to BVI before, arriving as governor. You know, we were the only people in a suit on the plane. Everyone else was ready for a holiday. And he asked me, actually, Dad, what does a governor do? Mm. You know, just as we're coming into Beef Island, I tried to explain to him the constitution and what a governor does. He's looking at me a bit confused. He says, well, what do we do as the boys? I said, look, just be yourselves. You know, you're kids. You're going to grow up here. It's a beautiful place. You're going to enjoy it. He was still trying to work out. And then he goes to me, I know what we have to do. I said, what's that? He says, we're penguins. I go, penguins? What do you mean penguins? I don't know if you've seen the film Madagascar.
Yes, of course.
Yes. So we've just got to smile and wave, boys. Smile and wave. So bringing him up here. I mean, as a dad and as governor, you know, we live obviously in Government House.
Yes.
We have made a point of deliberately saying from day one, yes, we live in it, but it's also the territory's house.
Yes.
So I've tried to as much as possible open the door. Yeah, it's the people's house. To communities, to events, to fundraising, to make it somewhere where people feel it's not a separate thing. Mm-hmm. Governor's house is the people's house. But we also tried to create a family home there. And for the boys, they've loved, I mean, how can you not love being a young child in BVI, the beaches, the swimming, the outdoor life, which coming from England, where it's not always like that.
Of course.
Has been wonderful for them.
Now, what has been the most, you talked about pressure, you mentioned the enormous amount of pressure and expectation. What has been for you perhaps the most difficult part of public life in the BVI?
That's an interesting question. So there's two answers to it, I think. So one, obviously, when I got here, we had the hurricanes. Now, that was the most pressured experience probably anybody's ever had in their life, whether that was somebody who was dealing with their house, their family, everything that's happened. As governor coming in, stepping into that, we're in a few weeks, the pressure to try to get the entire nation really through that, working with the government and with the premier at the time. But you feel that pressure that kept to a while. I almost had this point where you can't go to sleep because you know there's not power for many people. You can't go to sleep because there wasn't water in Anagada that night, or you know the devastation. And so you feel the pressure of 30,000 people on you to get. That's motivating though. Now, it can either break you or push you.
Yes.
And I think with pressure, you've always got to work out how do you turn it to good. So to motivate you to actually make progress, to get things better, to improve things. And that's how I tried to deal with pressure. There's a lot of other pressure. You get the pressure of public scrutiny. You get the pressure of the noise, as I call it, and bloggers and social media. And as people go into public roles, or they go into, doesn't have to be in government, but it can be in any sphere of life, particularly at the moment where everything is 24-hour on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, on everybody's got an opinion on you. So it goes back to holding true to what you believe. Don't always listen to the noise, because you can get very distracted by the negativity.
Thank you for that. You mentioned about the hurricanes and the difficulties of that, and a lot of the lessons that were learned from that, the floods coming right into next the hurricanes. But I want to touch on a very personal situation that took place that you were very, I think we saw a totally different governor, a totally different person. Earlier in 20, around mid-20, June, an employee of yours, Mr. Junior Peters, went missing. And you single-handedly not only led the search, but you raised awareness. And I know this because I'm in the media and I'm getting the information. And I remember wondering, why is there not a missing poster? Why are we not hearing about this? Why are we not getting statements? But then you came to the forefront and literally led the cause. Not only did you lead the cause, I remember being at the scene where you were very adamant that you were not leaving until Mr. Peters was found. And you walked through the bush. I remember looking at you and you came up with a set of bruises on your foot from the car shot. You didn't have to do that. You didn't have to take that route, but you did. Speak to me about your approach, what that did to you, and why you felt that you needed to be there, and you were very adamant, never forget, that you were not leaving until he was found. Let's revisit that for a second.
Yeah, that was a tough time. And emotionally, it's still quite raw, to be honest. Junior was a lovely, lovely guy. He was one of the most honest, smiley, you know, happy people I've ever worked with. And he was part of our team, but also part of our family at, at Government House. When he went missing, and at first we did just believe missing, we didn't know, obviously, sadly, that he had died. I have a responsibility as the governor, you know, and responsibility for the police, and or ultimately, you know, in terms of and the search efforts they were doing. Also as the head of the team of my office and the team there, but also as somebody who just cared about him.
Yeah.
And so those three blended in a way where I could see what was happening. You needed to, the privilege of my position to be able to raise awareness. But sometimes, as a leader, you've just got to decide to roll your sleeves up. Yeah, many, many times as a leader, you've got to stay at the helicopter view. You've got to, you know.
Yes, yes.
Other times, if you think you really need to lead from the front, you sometimes just need to do that. And that was difficult. I remember vividly going through the bush, and actually me and one of his friends were the first people who found, sadly found his body. But that will stay with me. Mm-hmm. But you, for me, in a way, it's not, you don't consciously sit and think, what do I do in this situation? You realize those three things blend. Mm-hmm. You know, the governor of the territory, the leader of the team, or the head of the team, and a friend. And they blended just naturally. And the obvious thing was, if I think more needs to be done, I'm not going to wait till it's done. I'm going to get out there. If I can do anything to support, if I need to show that we're not leaving here till we find him, I'm going to do that. So in a way, the lesson for me was, if there is such a lesson, was just let the natural reaction come. The natural reaction is someone was missing. We needed to find him. And if I can do anything to do that, if I can help galvanize people, motivate people, myself, directly get involved, that was something that just had to be done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The Black Lives Matter movement locally saw a lot of young people coming to the forefront with your support and took to the streets in support of a cause that they felt was worthy. And you marched the streets of Rotong with them in support. When you look at young men in the territory of the Virgin Islands and some of the challenges that they face, what would you say to them as they really try to maneuver through, and many of them are watching, what would you say to them?
Well, the key thing I would say to anyone is don't let anyone hold you back. You know, your life is too precious, too important, too short.
Absolutely.
You know, in reality, we just talked about someone amazing whose life was cut short. Don't take nonsense from anyone. Don't let anyone hold you back. And it was brilliant to see the Black Lives Movement globally and to see here in BVI. And I applaud Angela and others who were doing so much to try and promote it and push the agenda here. And in a way, you know, obviously, I can't put myself exactly in those experiences.
Understood, yes.
And I'm not going to pretend I can. But I did want to lend my voice to saying, don't let anyone hold you back. Don't let anyone give you any injustice. Don't let anyone tell you anything that isn't right about yourself,
yeah.
whatever that comes from. And that was powerful to see people here rightly, you know, just saying we stand with. Mm-hmm. But I was in America, globally, everywhere. So that would be my one bit of advice.
Good. You mentioned just now in that statement about perhaps not being able to relate solely to that struggle. But as a young lad, did you face any difficulties that you now see in young men in the territory of the Virgin Islands while growing up?
Well, everybody goes through, you know, their own experiences mm-hmm. in life. And I think it'd be wrong of me to sort of claim it. I'm the same as anyone or anyone's the same as anyone else. I mean, ultimately, we are all the same.
Yes.
We're all flesh and blood. We're all souls. And I think we often spend a lot of time searching for differences rather than searching for unity. I grew up in a very diverse part of London. I went to my local school. I then joined a system that was where most people were educated at more elite schools or they'd gone to the private schools.
Okay.
And I hadn't done that. And there's a lot of pressure to conform and to be more like the others who were maybe from the richer schools or whatever it was. And I also come from a background where I've learned a lot about from my father who fled Nazi Germany. I've learned a lot. So I'm half German, half German, half British. I've learned a lot about from him about an injustice against one person is an injustice against every person, regardless of who they are. You know, and that is very, very core to me, that if you see an injustice happening,
yes,
might not be happening to you.
Correct.
But it is actually happening to you because it's an injustice to everyone.
Correct.
And so that has instilled in me a lot of things now, whether that is things that are happening today, whether it's things that happened in the past, whether it's things that's happening around the world. Each individual is different, you know, in terms of their own experience of life, but we all have a shared duty, I think, mm-hmm. to challenge any injustice we see anywhere.
In my intro, I mentioned about the very amusing, what I sometimes find is amusing, feuds between public officers. Without going into depth of any of that, what would you say to public officers as it pertains to their tone, mm-hmm. their attitude, their demeanor, and the message that is sent through the airways when we have public bickerings?
Well, we said we wouldn't do politics. So rule number one broken. I'm not going to do politics, but to anyone in public office, mm-hmm. including myself, mm. essentially do your job.
Okay.
And don't be worried about doing your job. Do your job with confidence. Do it with the things that you need to do it. As anyone in public office, and again, including myself, we have the best jobs in the world. Might not have the highest paid jobs, might not get the flashiest cars or houses or whatever, but we do have the best jobs in the world because there's very, very few people, apart from those serving the public, who can get up every morning when the alarm goes and think, what's my job today? My job is to make the territory better. My job is to serve people. My job is to support people. My job is to build this territory for the future. Mm-hmm. And whatever job, you know, role you're doing, whether that is, you know, someone in public works or it's someone in another department or it's someone collecting the money, you know, whatever it is, you have the most amazing job in the world. So getting up and feeling confident about that, which is what I do every morning, and sort of, you have to remind yourself, because it's
course,
easy, you get into
course,
things and then you deal with all of the issues that come and then someone's having a go at you on this and then there's a long meeting on that and you lose sight every now and then of, no,
yes.
We've got the best job in the world. The job is to make this place as brilliant as it can be, even more brilliant than it can be in whatever role that anyone's doing, and try and put differences aside and unite around that purpose.
In having the best job in the world, now that you are in your departure of being governor, it would appear, well, not would appear, you have recently brought a lot of different topics, very controversial topics, to the forefront. I must ask, though, why now? Mm-hmm. At this point in your tenure, why are we seeing the conversation so strongly at this point?
That's a fair question. And again, we said we wouldn't do politics, but I know you. So, the first thing is, you know, from my time here, I have been struck by the talent, the potential, the dedication of people in this territory. There's very few places in the world, I think, and I'm proud to have served here, and I'm honoured to have worked with some amazing people in my time here. Very few places that could have taken the knocks we've had and still be on our feet.
Yeah.
Still be able to achieve, still be able to run businesses, still be able to have, you know, family life and all of that, and still laugh and smile and, you know, we've been through storms, we've been through, you know, well, now COVID, and all of that potential is amazing. So I've been trying to, in my time here, obviously we've had to deal with the things that have happened, but trying to help build the potential of the territory. Now, some of that is about helping to, on the areas I'm constitutionally responsible for, you know, on improving our policing, on improving our courts, on improving the public service, that's all, to help build that. Some of them are areas where the potential may be held back if we don't take some of the steps forward on transparency, on better accountability, on, as I said earlier, not letting anyone hold you back. And so I've been, over a while, have been receiving certain things about what we could do about it. I won't go into details,
of course,
here, as I said. And I felt it. I needed to say something to let people know that, just to raise our heads a bit, to say, we have huge, huge potential as a territory. Let's make sure we collectively don't let anything hold us back.
Got it.
Now on to the fun questions. No more politics. Is there a favorite charity? You have opened your home, Government House, to so many charities and so many wonderful fundraising event. It might be difficult for you to choose one, but do you have, or have you had, a favorite charity since being in the BVI?
That is too mean a question, because if I pick one, you're gonna be in a lot of trouble. Everybody else. I mean, every charity here does amazing work. And actually, that is something that makes BVI so special, is the charities, the dedicated people who do so much, and all of the organizations that we have here. I've been patron of a couple of them, which has been an honor. Last night, I was with Visor, who does incredible work out on the sea. But they are essentially one of our emergency services, you know, but run it as volunteers.
Remarkable work.
They do absolutely remarkable work. But we've also done great events with Red Cross, who also do absolutely remarkable work. Family Support Network, others as well. So I'm not going to pick one. I am going to duck that question, but I'm going to say, while I've got the floor, just going to say a huge thank you to everybody who does volunteer work, who supports the communities, who funds, you know, projects that are needed to help people. That is a real, real strength for BVI, and I hope it continues successfully in the future.
Is there a characteristic of Virgin Islanders that you most appreciate?
Oh, that's a good one. So, again, as I said, we shouldn't generalize. but I...
Or a few.
Or a few. So I have found in my time here, and I'm usually grateful for this as a family, where I found Virgin Islanders welcoming and willing to open up and to accept, you know, and to be see you as part of home, which is brilliant. And there's a wonderful characteristic of that. I found Virgin Islanders to speak their mind, which is brilliant as well. And that is good to tell you what they think.
Oh, yeah.
And that is a strength, you know, and a real strength, and something that I've admired, and led to good discussions and conversations as well.
What should we be paying more attention to from your seat as Virgin Islands citizens?
Well, and I touched a bit on this as we mentioned last week. As Virgin Islands, as I said before, we have so much. I believe we can be anything. Yeah, I believe we have talented population. We have huge strengths. I think that there is a debate to be had about, are we sure that we're removing any barriers to anybody getting on in life here and allowing people to progress, to achieve, and collectively then to the most that we can.
A piece of legislation that you were most proud to see passed?
Well, there's still some on the books, which I hope will pass.
Absolutely. There are a lot.
Which are still coming through. But there's certain things which are small, but behind the scenes, which are good, that actually have helped a lot. We took a step higher in 2017, which was, no one thought of COVID at that point.
Right.
But we actually put in for the courts. We were one of the first places in the world that got audiovisual links up for our court system. Okay. And that was because our court buildings were down.
Correct.
The storms. And those little things of building the future capability have been great, because we've actually now been able to, as we hit COVID, you know, have the structures there to allow us to keep some of our systems operating.
Great. A favorite sister island?
That, again, is one of those questions that will... But we have... They are all incredibly different. Okay. And that is one of the beautiful things about BVI. You can have, whether that's going around for work or going around for pleasure, and we've had particularly, you know, this year has been brilliant, actually. Nice. It's made, I think, a lot of people, including us, appreciate staycations.
Of course.
And doing more of that. But we've had staycations on Anagarda, you know, on the Virgin Gorda, we've been over to Jost Van Dyke. All of them very different. I would say, to put it on the spot, I have a favourite one for switching off.
A favourite island for switching off. Okay.
Anagarda.
Nice.
I have a favourite one for having a painkiller.
Okay.
Jost Van Dyke.
There you go.
And I have a favourite one for a family day, having fun on the beach. And that's Virgin Gorda.
Virgin Gorda. I agree with all of those, actually. Mm-hmm. Favourite local food? Or local restaurant.
Yeah, okay. So a local restaurant is going to cause problems as well. As governor, you have to try and keep it a little bit out of controversy, mm-hmm. but as I'm going, I might as well be controversial. So my favourite local food, actually, is Kalaloo soup.
Okay.
Which is something I hadn't had before, but okay. we really like it here. A favourite restaurant, the ones, so we have a few that we go to, not as often as we'd like to, but always love it if you hit sunset at the Coal Pot over in...
There you go.
Carrot Bay, that
capital
is.
Of the territory. Boom. Boom.
Is that your patch?
That's the capital, man. I'm telling you.
There you go. So that is always lovely if you hit there
good,
for sunset.
Good answer.
There are also other fantastic places as well, just before I annoy anyone, but yeah.
Local rum, favorite rum, favorite local rum.
So the rum that we normally drink is the one from the Colwood.
Yes, distillery. Colwood. We call it the panty dropper. That's the actual name of it, viewers.
It's well, I won't call it that.
It's the cane rum.
It is the cane rum, but yeah.
Good.
It is the cane rum, but I won't refer to it as that. I will call it a sophisticated drink for a good. Nice, slow evening
lovely.
Conversation.
I love sweet drink. Good, right? It's cool. Is there anything you would change about the BVI?
Well, it's not for me to say changes.
Okay.
There are a lot of things, as I said earlier, I believe people in the BVI have the show it and have it and have even more capacity for greatness.
Okay.
And so if there's one thing, just making everybody confident that they can bring that greatness out at any point and they can be the change that they want to see, as Gandhi says.
Amazing. Governor Jasper, in hindsight, 2020-2021, you have served, sacrificed, and succeeded. What's next for Gus?
What's next for Gus? Well, we are going back to England.
Yes.
So the children will get through school in England, and I'm going back into a job in the government in the UK, which I can't yet say.
I understand.
But I will be staying in touch with people here. So I'm
absolutely.
Sure we'll be talking more.
His Excellency, it has been a pleasure working with you, grilling you on many occasions. Always a pleasure. We thank you so much for your time, your tenure, your sacrifice and your contributions. And most importantly, thank you for imparting your bit of wisdom and knowledge to the future and aspiring gentlemen of the territory of the Virgin Islands. Thank you so much. And we wish you much success.
Ron, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Viewers, that's all the time we have. You've been watching The Art of a Distinguished Gentleman.